When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. Kevin Barry, it's a long time since we've seen you, boy. You've made us wait from your last wonderful novel, Night Boat to Tangier, which I've banged on about enough times in this programme, how much I loved it. But that was 5 years ago. Yeah. What kept you before you brought us The Heart in Winter?
Well, what's seldom is wonderful, you know. I try to keep myself quite scarce on the novels front, yeah. No, I've been doing other things. I've been writing short stories and a screenplay, A Night Boat to Tangier, actually, and various other bits and bobs. But this one... This one finally appeared for me late in the pandemic, towards the end of 21. I got the notion that my horse opera was finally ready to go.
Horse opera? What do you mean by that? A Western full of Cork people.
A Western with Cork accents. And this one actually has a long gestation. It was the first novel I attempted to write back in 1999, when I was a kind of 29-year-old freelancer down in Cork working for the papers. And I'd be going into Waterstones, you know, and looking at the new novels coming out and reading the first page and going, well, I have debating of that now anyway, if I put my mind to it at all, and not realising how much work was needed. But I went down to Alahees on the Beira Peninsula for a summer, bought a little Father Ted-style caravan, said, right, time for the novel, and had no idea what to write a novel about, really, until I started walking up around the old abandoned copper mines.
Tell us about those copper mines.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story, and not many people know about it, really. So in the 1880s, the copper mines out in the Beira Peninsula played out. Copper was done. They were finished. And at the same time, Butte, Montana was looking for copper miners because they were electrifying America and there was great money to be made out there. And by 1891, when the book is set, 30,000 people are in this mad little boom town out in the high in the Rocky Mountains. 10,000 of them are from County Cork.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
And in the way of Cork lads abroad, they lost the run of themselves, you know, making great money, taken to the bars and the brothels and the dope houses and the whole lot of it. Desperate, hard, difficult work, and $7 or $8 a day. Unbelievable money for the time. And it's a fabulous story. I came across it in 99. I decided I have to go. You know, I have to go.
Off to Montana.
My first trip to the US, October 99, flew to Seattle and got on a Greyhound bus for about 14 and a half hours and showed up with an actual Irish accent, and they love you in Butte straight away when you have the actual accent, you know. And they gave me great stuff. They were digging out boxes of letters that Cork miners had sent home in the 1890s. I got everything about the bars, the brothels, the whole lot of it, all the background.
And they were still very conscious, were they, of the Irish heritage?
Oh, God, yeah, and very proud of it. And you opened the phone book there in 1999 and it's just Harrington's, Sullivan's, Murphy's, you know, page after page of them. By proportion, still, it's the biggest Irish city in America, you know, in terms of population.
How big a city is it?
At its peak, it got to about 100,000. And it's since, you know, come down an awful lot. The mines eventually played out in the 1960s and it was quite depressed. It's become a kind of a weird tourist destination now, in a way. Like, it's a plain sister of a town in some ways. It's not lovely, but it has great character, and it's an evocative place. I remember being brought around the last operating brothel in Butte, Montana, by a lady called Norma Jean, who was the last madame, and it had been open since the 1880s, and she had just closed it in 1999.
So you're telling me the good Catholic Irish used to frequent places like that? Yeah, I know an Irishman drinks, but he doesn't necessarily go to the brothel, does he?
Well, the crazy thing was, she was reopening it as a brothel museum, and she brought me down and showed me the cribs the girls had worked in. And she brought me out a sign that had been up in the brothel in the 1890s with all the services available, the tricks available, written in Irish.
In Irish?
Because a lot of the lads coming over, the West Cork was still Gaeltacht at that time, a lot of them didn't have English. So they had to know what was on offer at this place. It was called the Blue Venus.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I had all this fantastic kind of texture for a novel, but at the time I didn't have the characters yet to make it believable. I wrote like something like 100,000 words, and it's under debate in the far room in County Sligo. I knew at the time it wasn't coming alive for me. And it was a real apprentice effort, I kind of think, you know. But just kind of late in the pandemic, shopping around for a novel, and suddenly I had this idea of runaway lovers, Tom and Polly. Where are they? I knew they were in North America. I said, Jesus, this could be the time for my Butte, Montana novel, you know. And then I had probably, I'd say, the most fun I've had in my writing career for about 10 months. It just kind of took...
Why is that? Why was it so much fun?
It was ready. It was ready to go, you know. And it's funny writing fiction. It's kind of a mysterious and unpredictable business. And often it's just a case of waiting around long enough for the characters to properly show themselves to you and reveal themselves and tune into them. And I felt I could hear them. And I knew what they sounded like, and I knew I was going to be able to follow along with them for a while. And it's like I write the novels quite quickly once I start. This was 10 or 11 months. But it's all in kind of a process, and I kind of really reside with them, you know.
But you don't overwrite. I suppose this is because of all the short stories you do as well. I mean, I'm looking forward. I'm taking this on my holidays in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to reading it, but I know it's not going to take me too long. It's a thin volume as a novel goes.
No pun intended, yeah. But I must say, as a reader, I love picking up a 200-page novel. If you're going to ask me to sit through 650 pages, you better be Hilary Mantel. You know, it has to be good. I think there's a lot to be said now for the novel that you can read in 2 or 3 hours. The kind of time that you'd give to kind of
a good movie
or something, you know. The way I am as a writer as well, I want it to be a really intense experience for the reader. I want to really trap them in this world and transport them to this place while they're in my hands, you know. And I like the shorter rush of it rather than a much longer, expansive novel. It's my inclination to go shorter. I love to edit. You never feel very much in control when you're writing those long, messy first drafts. But I love cutting. I love to pare it back, you know, and get to the, take all the scaffolding away out of a story and see if it's still holding together.
That's a great discipline to have.
Yeah. I guess a lot of it as well probably comes from the good old journalistic days, you know. Like I have a very old fashioned background now for a creative writer. Most of them go to university to do it now, but I came up as a cub reporter on local newspapers and went through all that for years and freelance for years and years. And it's very good training for a writer.
But gave you an eye for a story too, didn't it?
Oh, like Limerick District Court in the late 1980s would give you a great eye for a story, you know? And Limerick Corporation meetings with Willie O'Dea and Jim Kimmy, you know? You'd be ready for a Western after it. Like,
what is the thing with Irish novelists, particularly of your generation and a bit older, with Westerns? Is it you grew up watching the movies or something?
I think one channel land in the 1970s that they had to fill the afternoon schedules. And I remember, like, as a 3-year-old, all I had to hear was the cloppity-clop of the hooves across the screen. And I was gone, you know, and I was in front of it. I have a vivid memory, actually, about it, about the age of 6, standing up on the dining room table and singing El Paso to my family and getting so carried away with my performance, I fell off the table and cracked open the side of my head and was rushed to the Limerick Regional for 2 stitches, you know. So I was transported by the Westerns at an early age, I'd say.
And you love characters. I mean, I mentioned A Nightboat to Tangier, and I loved your characters and that, and I loved the story. Tell us about writing the screenplay of it, though.
Yeah, Morrison and Charlie, my dubious Corkonian gentleman down in the south coast of Spain. Yeah, very quickly after the book came out, I optioned it to a couple of production companies that were very interested very early. And the screenplay is written now and it's cast, and there's a director in play, so it's just waiting for...
Who's cast? Who's director? Can you tell us?
The director is James Marsh, a fabulous director, well known for the great documentary Man on Wire, which won the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the cast is Michael Fassbender, Donald Gleeson and Ruth Negga. So it's fabulous stuff in terms of cast. You couldn't...
That's brilliant.
So just hopefully the...
When's it going to be made?
Hopefully all the schedules and money and magic happens in that way now, you know, and we wait for the white smoke from the balcony to hopefully make it happen.
I hope Michael Fassbender is going to have a Cork accent. We can't have a Kerry man playing it as a Kerry man rather than
He's
as a Cork
up
man.
The road. Killarney isn't too far. He can manage it, I'm sure.
That'll be fun though, but it's such a brilliant book. How different is the screenplay going to be to bring it to life on the film?
Actually, some of my favourite Morris and Charlie lines aren't in the book. They're in the screenplay. There's more of it. I opened
really?
Out the story a bit, yeah. Like in the novel, it's very much the two lads in the ferry terminal in Algeciras waiting to see if yeah. one of their daughters shows up. And I brought it back a little from the book. We go a few days back from that, and they're kind of on the road around the south of Spain trying to find information. And it was great fun to do that as well. I liked the screenplays, actually. I like kind of...
Have you done them before?
Yeah, I had a film made of my short stories, Dark Lies the Island, and I've been involved with adapting City of Bohan as well, and that's with an animation company in California at the minute. So it's different from the novels or the solo mission, and I like the Zooms and the meetings, you know, it's a bit more sociable. And just from my kind of journalistic days, I miss meeting people and the kind of the chats, you know.
But you've used a word a couple of times, which I really enjoyed hearing you say, fun. Fun doing the screenplay, writing this novel.
It's a really simple equation for me, Matt. Like, I think if I'm not having a good time in my shed out the back of the house in Sligo, beloved reader or viewer down the line isn't going to have a good time. It shouldn't be tortured poets department, you know. It shouldn't be that kind of a... that kind of suffering view with a writer's life. You should be, you know, it's a real privilege to get away with it, to be able to just make my living, going out the back and making up these mad little worlds and stories. So I want to give myself a good time at it.
As I said, I haven't read The Heart in Winter yet because I'm saving it for myself for my holidays the week after next. One reviewer has said it's your best work yet. Do you think it is?
I think it's probably the best of the novels yet, yeah.
Jesus, I
like them all.
It's a high bar with Nightboat to Tangier. So if this is better, I'm going to really enjoy it. Kevin Barry, it's been great having you in the studio again. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a million, Matt. Cheers.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.